Sid Fernando back with us. Good morning.
Back to the grind.
Exactly.
Hi, Steve.
Tell us, first of all, tell us about, little time off and the holiday season. What was keeping you busy or not?
Well, no, it was great to, I hadn't taken a vacation in several years. So it was kind of nice. And, part of it, spent abroad, did some riding there too. And, then I had Thanksgiving with my 93-year-old aunt, and poignant. It's always poignant to speak to people in their 90s. Then back to BK.
Nice.
Cold BK, yeah. So, as I told you, so apologies. I've been... haven't kept up with a lot of news over the last 2 weeks, as I mentioned to you, but some of it I have. Some interesting stuff out there, obviously.
Well, the big news, obviously, from the Fortnite that created just a firestorm was the rather sudden development that sends California Chrome to Japan. And it seems, that his legion of fans just either don't want to accept what transpired or don't really understand the mechanics of how it came to be. Your thoughts, Sid, about what this, what this says about the industry landscape and what is viewed in some cases as a rush to judgment about Stallions, but also the financial pressures. I mean, there's a lot of tangents to hit on.
There really
right?
are.
Yeah.
And I think your last point there about the financial pressures. I mean, it's a commercial marketplace now, and it's very rare for people here to be able to withstand that. I know, for example, Chuck Kripke had a huge offer, relatively speaking, for B Jersey from Japan. But he's a throwback. He's an owner breeder, and he wants to try to make his own stallion. He owns the stallion 100%, and he turned down $3.5 million for that horse, which was a massive offer, really. To basically stand in for $5,000 and try to make it. Now that's atypical these days. What's typical are the partnerships and syndicates that own these stallions, and the various tangents you mentioned. One of them is the fact that there's so much pressure right now on stallions to perform right away. And now we're having cases where the stallions, are actually being sold sometimes before their foals hit the track, as in the case of California Chrome. Sometimes, partway through their two-year-old season, first crop, as in the case of Daredevil. He's got two-year-olds, and he was sold to Turkey. And really, it's in the case of a Daredevil, that point's easier to understand in the sense that if these horses don't seem to hit right away, the following year they're going to have a big drop-off in terms of mares. In the case of the California Chrome, where he still has, he's in that third, fourth year period, it's tough anyway. And when you can get if you get a financial offer that totally outweighs what your potential income could be, people take it. I mean, Judmont took it at a much later point point with Empire Maker, where he already had several crops racing. But if you think back to Hansen at Ashford, he was sold after his first year at stud. And, in a few of these cases, Empire Maker notably, and also Take Charge Indy, who was brought back from Korea, they leave behind horses that make them commercial here again, and they're, you know, these farms have gone back and brought these horses back. So it's a really interesting marketplace, and it's really commercially based, Steve, because these horses are, you know, owned by syndicates, and it's syndicate managers have, just like corporate managers, they're beholden to their shareholders to get the best ROI for their shareholders. And so that's what it works out to that way.
Let's also revisit a topic that we really foreshadowed some of this even before he reached the stallion status and you know moved into the shed. He was always up against it with that breeding. The lucky pulpit situation, it was kind of, I don't want to say dooming him, but given the landscape and given the tide of stallions right now and the the marketplace that's available, it just always seemed that he was, no matter what his accomplishments were, that it was going to be a long shot that he would have a vibrant, viable North American stud career.
It was, and the people that actually, as you recall, he had management issues with his owners at the time, and then he was an aborted European campaign, and then the bone bruising, and he looked like he was just done, and he would have been actually not very well received in terms of what he was eventually, and that happened because TaylorMade stepped in, and they actually put together a syndicate, and they actually made a huge profit from him by putting him back and then winning the Dubai World Cup, where they got, quite a substantial purse, obviously. That then catapulted them into being able to stand a horse that might have been a $15,000 stallion to 40. But that 40 was probably not going to be sustainable, Steve, over 4 years. And I think they realized that. And then they were getting money offers from Japan. The Japanese they have a huge love affair with Kentucky Derby winners or Kentucky Derby-related stuff, primarily with Sunday Silence becoming such a landmark sire there. And Japan had always been a place where, Derby winners might end up going to stud, but they've been playing more aggressively. They took I'll Have Another there. He didn't do much, and he came back to California. But California Chrome, has that Dubai thing. He had the Grade 1-1 on turf, which is all the top racing in Japan is on turf, plus that Kentucky Derby cachet. And so the money there versus what these guys are looking at, 35,000 sub fee now over the next 2 years, it was a no-brainer, I would assume. And so it was a pretty easy sale. Now, he's one of three Derby winners going there this year. The other one, Super Saver, going abroad, that is. Super Saver is going to Turkey, and Animal Kingdom's going to Japan, too. So, you have those three, and then you have actually Bodemeister, the sire of the Derby winner, and Always Dreaming going to Turkey, and New Year's Day, who sired Maximum Security first across the line in the Derby, has gone to Shaddai in Japan. So you can see the Derby connections and how well-received they are abroad. And again, in the bigger picture of things, stallions here, they go to stud with a big fee early on. That maybe might get them through the first 2 years, and then some of these horses, they're looking at struggling through that third, fourth year, And if you can get an, if they get offers that are so enticing and very difficult to turn down based on pure math, you know, it's going to happen. And that's, and particularly with the way, you know, we have a commercial industry here primarily. So, yeah, that's basically what happened. In the case of California Chrome, you know, he's got these, the Chromie, this Chromie fan club. And of course, from what I saw, you know, there was some nasty stuff on social media about they exploded, you know, as you know. So there wasn't that type of response, obviously, for Animal Kingdom or Super Saver. But, you know, it was an interesting development. And it's probably something that we're going to probably see more of down the line. Horses, well, horses that are going before they even, you know, have foals, maybe.
Well,
runners. Yeah.
The thing that makes this a lot, it should make it a lot easier for people to comprehend, is when you see, I mean, just even if you just limited it to the Sons of Tappet, and I mean, this Constitution situation, you know, only adds to the frenzy. You know, why? And the thing is, why would you know, prospective breeders, you know, why would you go to what granted was a wonderful racehorse with questionable breeding? I mean, the you know, the history of unsuccessful stallion, you know, that have this MO is pretty legendary. I mean, you know, typically when they look like they shouldn't be good sires, they generally turn out to be not good sires.
And very few, and an adjunct to that is very few horses end up becoming good sires to begin with.
Exactly. So, yeah. You're already dealing with a long shot.
Right. You're behind the eight ball to begin with. And then, of course, you've got, you know, you've got these other factors that come into play: pedigree, confirmation. You know, and in this case, you know, as you point out, his sire was Lucky Pulpit. You know, of course, you know, this game is, there's always hope because you end up occasionally getting a horse like Tis Now, for example, California bred, like California Chrome, by an odd sire, and he worked out. But again, in the general scheme, very few sires actually do work out, and people like to, you know, they feel like, you know, if you're playing those odds, you're better off going with given the race records and everything, with the better pedigrees and sires that seem to be the most fashionable anyway.
Well, for those that want to seize on the Sons of Tappet conversation, your cohort, Frances Caron, she wrote a nice piece at workhorse.com.
Yeah, she really did.
Over the summer.
She pointed out this year that there were several young Tappets, you know, heating up after, you know, Steve, with Tappet, there's been a lot of hit and miss up until this year. And then this year, as she pointed out, aside from Constitution, there's Tappature at Derby Dan, Race Day, very inexpensive fee, had four black type winners already this year.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, these Tappets, you know, have been percolating. And, of course, Constitution gives the impression that he's, you know, something special.
Very much. I'll send out the link to that to that piece by Francis, and it's under the Who's Hot, Who's Not moniker came at the end of July. And Francis, she's a multi-talented threat.
She really is. I mean, but, I was just talking to her. I mean, she, you know, I've hired her as the bloodstock editor of our blog there. The Who's Hot, Who's Not column is our work, our company blog. And she really does some fantastic pieces. She's, you know, I consider her, you know, one of the premier pedigree writers. She's a fantastic writer to begin with, but knowledgeable in pedigrees. Frequently, you know, I run things by her just to get her opinion. So I'm glad you did give her some props.
Well, and also a fabulous photographer.
Yes, indeed. Exactly.
On top of everything else.
However,
exactly.
She's, as you and I found out, in a live radio show, we need to prod her a little more.
she's a little media shy,
exactly.
As the saying goes. Will her and Jerry Brown.
I saw Jerry Brown recently too.
Did you really?
Yeah, I saw him in New York at a function.
Well, we're trying. Andy Serling and I are trying to get Jerry. You know, after that wonderful piece that he wrote, a terrific.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, supportive piece about LASIKs in TDN, and
he did. And the first thing he came up to me was saying, "Did you read my piece?" And then he
of
said,
course.
"You know, I linked to your column too."
Jerry is something. You know, by the way, speaking of TDN, I want to draw attention to today's front page, for two different reasons, and there's a piece that caught my eye immediately when I saw the headline "Moving On from Stormcat." I knew it was going to be about Rick Waldman.
And I read that piece this morning. Yeah.
Well, how about the addition of the great Joe Sullivan to the TDN lineup? You know, Joe, of course, from the Boston Globe and retired from the Globe. And I was delighted to see Joe's byline. Joe loves the game.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's his first piece, wasn't it?
It's got to be, because I'm going to guess it is, because I hadn't seen another.
And Rick Waldman, by the way, the subject of the piece is just a terrific guy. He's a guy that during the Stormcat era, when I was at Daily Racing Form as a bloodstock editor, always took calls, always was honest with the media. You know, really, it was not one of these guys that you know, bullshitted, and he's a great guy. I've always had some great simpatico with him. And on a personal note, I saw him at the Breeders' Cup a few years ago, and he's part of the same club I am. We both lost a son, and you know, I just went up to him, and we had a brief conversation about it, which, you know, among the people that are in this club, it's just an acknowledgement, and I felt a lot of empathy for him, and I've always admired him. He's a terrific guy.
He was on with us early on, and while Stormcat was still active but winding down, and I remember it being, you know, one of my first you know, conversations. I mean, Glennie Kane Oakford, of course, was our, even before Glennie, too, we, you know, we always have had bloodstock conversations, but then when we would reach out for, you know, industry, you know, people aside from pundits and journalists, that piece with Rick Waldman was one of the earliest. We had like an hour long, and John Perana sat in, and JJ might have as well, and we might have been almost like a round table discussion about the, you know, the long term impact of Stormcat. And actually, you know, it's interesting, Sid, that this comes up, and we, you know, point out this Rick Waldman piece by Joe Sullivan. You can follow Joe, by the way, Globe Sullivan. He still has Globe in his name, Globe Sullivan, and Joe, a wonderful supporter of racing, but a experienced and savvy sports writer on any topic. But it might be almost time to revisit that legacy and of Stormcat, because the long shadow that it was, Sid, that I think people expected him to have really hasn't necessarily, been rooted in the firmament at this point.
Yeah, that's true, because he had one really good stallion in Giants Causeway who died recently, and some of the other stallions that he had, it kind of fizzled. Of course, there are other generations removed from him that we forget because it's been so far. Into Mischief, of course, is a Stormcat line, of course, but that goes from Harlan, one of Stormcat's lesser Group One winning sons. But yeah, you're right. Not in that big way that you might have imagined.
Yeah, at the time. I mean, at the time, mm-hmm. The book, the Stormcat book, is that Stud, right?
Yeah.
That, in fact, I've got that as I turn around to my stacks of writing. I'm going to draw a blank. Here it is. Here, Kevin Conley. Kevin Conley's book, Stud, right. Adventures in Breeding, there's a ton about Stormcat at the time. It was sort of like a snapshot, really, of that era. I guess I have been doing this a while, because it's hard to think of eras having been, come to an end.
Yeah, that's right.
15 years. But make sure you pick up TDN today and the Rick Waldman piece by Joe Sullivan. Very cool. And speaking about the breeding aspect, I know that we'll have other topics and sidebars, Sid, through the end of the year. However, we do want to make sure we visit the important planning aspects between now and February 15th. And for your client, Sid, and for anybody that is a commercial breeder of any size, or a home breeder of any size, what should they be doing over the next 3 to 6 weeks in terms of finalizing their plans and being ready, in some cases, maybe to see the foals that they're going to get, starting in January, and if they have to make any changes in their stallion choices. Talk a little bit about these next 60 days.
Yeah, that's a good point. With, mares and foals, for example, there are several breeders there's quite a few guys, people that would like to see instead of booking right away, and especially if you're not booking at the very top where, it might be tougher to get in. A lot of breeders like to wait to see what that foal looks like before they decide to plan the next mate, so to speak. And that's a really important thing, because, you plan a mating, and then if you get a good-looking foal, sometimes the breeder will want to go back to that stallion. A lot of breeders I know, Bob Lothenbach is one, for example. He's a client of ours. He likes to breed his mare to the same stallion twice. Mr. Fripke is that way, too. It makes sense. A lot of times, you want to give that, you like that mating so much, and you want to give it some opportunity. Commercial breeders, frequently, they don't wait. They're looking to breed to the next first crop sire. So they've already booked, to excuse me, the best horse that they feel will affect them. Many times, and you had pointed this out to me earlier, sometimes people tend to overbreed mares, and that's not a good idea. Usually, especially in the era of big books, one of the things you want to avoid, you don't want to bring your yearling to market as a commercial breeder having overbred your mare, meaning you've paid more for a stud fee for a pedigree that might not warrant it, because by the time you've cataloged that yearling, unless it's just an outstanding physical, you're going to get penalized because you're going to get better pedigrees for that sire in a sale. Frequently, we'll say underbreed the mare because when you go to market, it's better to have a better pedigree for that particular sire, to be a better mare in that sire's book, and to have that go to market rather than being on the other end of the thing. So there are a lot of strategies like that that you want to follow. For breeders that are breeding to race, well, you know, some of your best bargains are some really good sires in their third and fourth years, because you're going to get discounts and stud fees. And if you're not so concerned about the commercial marketplace and you're not breeding to sell, well, then you're going to get a pretty good discount on the stud fee to a stallion that you really like. And so that's another option when you're thinking. It all depends, first and foremost, on what is your game plan. And then you kind of formulate what you're trying to do. I had a client the other day that has a decent mare, but has already had a few foals, and he wants to try to kind of jumpstart the mare because he feels she has, and she does have, some commercial worth, but she gets devalued with every foal that doesn't do much, or, you know, has led to a stallion that's perceived as being not commercial. So he had a very specific thing. You know, he wanted to try to get into book three at Keeneland September, and what was the best way to get a great mating with the right stallion to try to get there. So we had to formulate a game plan for him. But again, it all comes down to what you're really, trying to do, and what's the best avenue to that. Some people want to have the option of being able to sell or raise. So in that case, you need to up your commercial game a bit to keep that foal as a potential sales foal as well. Other people are just breeding to sell. So there's various avenues there, depending on the type of mare you have. Frequently an older mare that has a nice pedigree, you go to a younger stallion that's very commercial, first-year horse maybe. A younger mare off the track, you know, you try to go to a more proven stallion to help her with her produce record, and at the same time, perhaps commercially as well, if that stallion does have some commercial worth to it. And again, it depends on your stud fee range and what, you know, what you want to do. I really enjoy working with people that know what they're doing, because that makes it a lot easier. Of course, we help a lot of new people in the business as well, and we guide them, but they're not as attuned, and this is a marketplace that's constantly changing, so you have to really project what you're doing now couple of years down the road too. So there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, involved in it. You know, for example, if you bred to Daredevil and now you've seen he's been exported with his first crop of 2-year-olds this year, I mean, your heart sinks, because now you've got to bring a Daredevil to the marketplace, and the marketplace is already, you know, written his obituary in essence. So these are some of the pitfalls you kind of work around. And frequently I get stud farms that call me up to ask me what I think a horse should stand for. And I had a conversation with a big stud farm recently where they set a certain price, and I said, you know, would you support this horse at this price? I said, I really like your horse, but, you know, I'm about $7,500 away from you, and I'll tell you why, because you're going to get your money at your stud fee for the first year or two, and then, you know, you might sell abroad. You might drop the stud fee drastically in the third or fourth years, and my guy who bred to it is now looking like he's bred to a horse that's been devalued. So, you know, there's a lot. It's a very complex thing, and I'm fortunate that I'm able to talk to a lot of these stud farms, and they do kind of run some prices by guys like me because we know they know we're like sending mares to the stallions, and yeah, so it is kind of a complex thing when you're you know involved in it. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or say you know you need a consultant or whatever. You can do it yourself, but it's you know it's like you got a major plumbing problem. Yeah, you can you know get a book, get a video, and do it yourself, or you can call a high level plumber who can probably get it done for you quicker and more efficiently and maybe better. But, you know, again, there's various aspects to it, and those are some.
Terrific. And, of course, Sid available for consult and to help you with your broodmare ban, the broodmare compatibility report that what does it? We haven't discussed this since last year. Explain what the compatibility does.
It's basically called a broodmare compatibility analysis with Lion Score. It's something that's very specific to us. And essentially, what we're doing is we're analyzing your mare given some of these criteria I just told you about, and we'll recommend 8 to 10 stallions for that mare. And like I said, people that know what they're, you know, doing, they're able to then take those, look at those 8 stallions, see why we recommend them, and then they'll go and visit those stallions and see which ones would fit the mare best physically as well. And so they've got, you know, some basis to work with, and, you know, that kind of stuff has worked. I mean, that's one way of how we help people. Another way is, for example, when Gary and Mary West and Ben Glass were standing at Hillendale, some of their young stallions, like New Year's Day, they wanted us to kind of highlight a few broodmare prospects from the November sale that we felt would work with their stallions, you know, to be able to help promote their stallions. So in that case, we just looked at broodmares that would just work with their specific stallion. One of those mares was the Dam of Maximum Security. Another one was the Dam of British Idiom. So, you know, there's various ways that, you know, we kind of work with breeders and owners during the season. And the other thing is, we're a boutique company. We have 9 employees, and you know, we do get backed up. So a lot of times, when if we're in the midst of stuff and people call, sometimes we can't do it, or we have to tell them, you know, it's 3 weeks, and they understand where they can't wait, so they have to go somewhere else. But, you know, I like to work with people that I know, and if they're new people, you know, I talk to them. And we've gotten a few people from your show, Steve, including the your big fan in Montana, who's been great. He's done several mares with us, and you know, I'll talk to people and see you know, if we can help them or not. And if I think we can, then we'll, and if we have the space, then we'll work with them.
Well, between the broodmare compatibility analysis with the Lion score and the Enix app and everything that you get from that, the crosses that work that have a proven success, and you know, I know this is it's intimidating for people, and it's tough to make decisions, you know, and we should also include, because we're facing it right now ourselves, we are a very difficult situation with our filly Bolterine that fractured a sesamoid and won't be able to go on, and I'm not inclined to try any more breeding. And if I do, it'll be with Carlisle Bell, who we bred, and you know, my inclination is, I mean, the filly is just a beautiful filly, and she'll be a very attractive to anybody that, you know, in terms of that part of it, Arch out of Belong to Me mare with the stake winning sibling. But you know, our inclination is to cover her, in the winter and sell her in November, in foal. So
that's not only option for people. Exactly.
That,
yeah.
I want to bring that up because that's a, you know, that's an area that, you know, you can use Sid's help as well, deciding, you know, what is a match that is going to be attractive when, you know, we send her through the ring in November. What, you know, and this is a bit of a dice roll where you're going to maybe pick, you know, maybe this is, you know, is this your chance to go to World of Trouble, for instance, Cantero's son for 15,000 at Hill and Dale, and be out in front of, you know, what feels like a good opportunity, Army Mule. And, you know, do you take a chance on, you know, somebody that's a little smaller budget that is, could very well catch a wave. So,
and the other part about it, this I should say to your listeners and to you on this too, is if with a mare like that, it sometimes pays to wait a little when you're ready to breed her. And I'll tell you why, because you've got, as the season goes, Pete Bradley, for example, has his list of stallions. You get a lot of discounted seasons available that people don't know about. And those become available as you go through the season. And, you know, many times you'll get severely discounted seasons because there's no guarantee. You'll get other seasons that are discounted, shareholder seasons that are live full. And Pete Bradley's list, which I use, sometimes, you know, you can, what he'll do is sometimes he'll bundle a group. Like if he's got, say, five mares he wants to go to X stallion and you want to go to that stallion, so he includes you in that group, then he could go to that stud farm and say, hey, look, I got six mares that want to go to the stallion. Can you give me a discount on this bundle? And a lot of times stud farms will do that. This isn't widely known, but, you know, it's always worth especially, you know, cheaper stallions, and there's various ways to financial instruments to work around. And even at the highest levels, I remember one year I was Mr. 50 wanted to breed two mares to Dynaformer. Of course, you know, there was this feeling that his fertility was waning in that period, but his stud fee was 150. So I bought one season for 150 at the farm price, but the other one I went on the open marketplace, and because of the fear of the shareholder of his waning fertility, I was able to get a no guarantee of 40,000. So I averaged, you know, so those two averaged 190, which if they'd been both live full would have been 300. Suddenly I got two seasons for 190. One, of course, no guarantee. And we took the risk on, and fortunately, both mares produced foals, and one was Danish Dynaformer, a graded stakes winner and a classic winner in Canada. The other was a graded place, stakes place filly. So, you know, there's ways to work around that. Other times you can buy a severely discounted no guarantee season, and then turn it into a live full season yourself through an insurance company. And sometimes when you look at the math in that, you'll find that by buying it at a severely discounted fee and then turning it into a live full yourself brings you in at less than the farm price of the live full season. So you're getting your own discount by creatively managing your financial instruments. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of things that go into this.
And the other advantage, too, of waiting is you'll get early February, March reads on two-year-old and training sale results.
That's a really good,
Gives you a couple of hints, and especially if they're subtle. We talk about it every winter, Sid, kind of looking between the result lines and finding, a stallion that may have just had a smattering of offerings and sold at 6, 7, 8 times the stud fee. And that's your first indication, that there might be something happening, and then you latch on, and that's what I mean when I say trying to catch a wave and get out in front of it. Sid, this has been a tremendous 45 minutes, but I am going to ask you two more things. And our friend Debbie Gorman made a very timely suggestion, which prompted two thoughts. Debbie asking if you'd care to pass any homage to Joe Dolling, who passed away a couple of days ago, the longtime California-based breeder. And I suppose I need to also mention the passing of Bob Fox.
Yeah, well, both guys I knew very well. And Joe Dolling, I was just in contact with him just before I left on my trip, maybe 3 weeks beforehand. A super guy. In fact, I sent for Mr. Fipke a Jersey town. He stands at his farm. And a great old-timer. He said to me he was sick. He said, don't worry about it. We'll be taking care of Jersey town. I think his daughter is running the place. And tried to assuage any fears. And I kind of knew, what... what was in the cards, and I'm glad you asked me this question, because the dealings we had with him over the last year and a half with Jerseytown being there were really good, and a really honorable guy, and an old timer, but he was willing to listen too, and my condolences to his family. Bob Fox, I've known Bob, for years. He was a serious character. He was just a pure salesman, too. He was, obviously involved in the whole Calumet thing. But he then later on started selling seasons on his own here and he got hooked up with selling this liquid that he thought it was really good for horses as well as humans, and he started to take it himself. It was some kind of vitamin formula, and he would rave about it, and I almost bought some from him, but I didn't. But he was a character, and again, condolences to his family as well.
Well, and of course, Bob, when we started the show, and going back to the early days, Bob... we had a feature called Thoroughbred Legacies, and we would talk about old-time stallions and the breeding side of the business, and it was always interesting. It taught me a lot, and his legacy is. I'm not going to call it controversial, but it's not a black and white result.
Very shades of gray, but he was a great guy.
Yeah,
and he was a fun guy. And, he was irrepressible, is the way I would just call Bob.
Good description. Good description. He was also, he was a bulldog too. You talk about, you know, he was, and you know, health, you know, he listen, for somebody that had prostate cancer, he or, you know, went, you know, a long while. I mean, he it seemed like he was going to be taken 10 years ago, and, and he took, he went, like he approached everything. He was all out to, you know, to figure out, you know, what would be best for him to prolong, you know, his life and to keep him healthy as long as possible. And it, and he absolutely was successful because, I think he was told, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago that, that he had a short time left, and, and he extended, he made it last, Bob Fox. And,
there's
Ed
always
Dulling.
This poignancy to death. You know, it's really poignant, and it's the remembrances and the people. It's always great to be able to appreciate these people. It's actually what I was telling you about my Thanksgiving with my 93-year-old aunt. You know,
that's great.
Her sheer dignity at the age of 93, and you know, when you're 93, you know you don't have much time left, but you continue with your life, and it's really admirable, and it's really worthwhile for people to you know, be able to appreciate that and the process, because you're going to go through it one day too.
Exactly, exactly. nobody gets out alive.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, get a hold of Sid at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111, 510-490-1111. If you have not enrolled your stallion, don't let this slip, because people are looking up Enix right now, and if your stallion is not in the system, you're missing an opportunity for people to realize that your stallion is a good choice for their mare, and enix.com, and of course the app as well. And we'll do a lot more of these prep, you know, seasonal prep conversations, and what to be doing, what to watch out for, how to make your decisions here, because we're literally 8 weeks away from the opening of breeding season.
Yeah, and I appreciate the plug, you know. And a lot of the times, Steve, it's really, you know, someone will call me up, and if we can help someone, I'll just talk to them and tell them what, you know, they should do. But, you know, as you probably, you know, figured out with me, I'm not a real big salesman. But much to the chagrin of some people in my company, I think. But, you know, I think you got to do it right. And if people are interested in this, you know, there is something that we will work with. Yeah.
Sid Fernando, everybody, follow Sid under Sid Fernando, and follow Sire Watch, and of course at Hillendale, getting ready for the breeding season. And there's a fascinating story to talk about with John Sakura when we get the opportunity, with the new development, and one of several historic properties that are being, you know, basically being refashioned. John, kind of a life's work project. Elmendorf Farm undergoing a similar scenario. And of course, Kevin Plank has already, you know, refashioned Sagamore. And of course, Calumet too, if we want to talk about,
right,
you know, what Brad Kelly's done, and what Heinrich DeKwiatkowski did ahead of him, saving Calumet. You know, these are important legacies in the game. Sid, thanks so much. This was really fun.
Absolutely. Great talking, Steve. I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by John Sakura's Hillendale Farms. Let's take a break. Coming up toward the top of the hour, Chuck could not get back to the studio for today, so we may do a little phone with him instead. We'll see. But I've also got Pete. You know, Pete was back-ended today, because he was doing something in the morning. So we got Pete Fornatale. We got Richie Baltus that's on the horizon. I got a ton of news, including quite a bit of regulator activity. Of course, tomorrow, Linda Rice, you want to talk about a shoe that has been waiting to fall, the other shoe. You know, you got to go back, 4 years to that case regarding the racing office and access to entries and, the Clocker Steve and Mike Gonzalez who got in trouble and so forth. And at the time, it came out that, Linda was under scrutiny about, gifts to the racing office. And that's what this is about. I've gotten a couple of inquiries on what's this thing with Linda Rice. It's not new. It's old enough for kindergarten. But she'll sit with the gaming commission tomorrow and we'll see where it goes. It feels like she's got to face some penalty. I mean, some punishment of some ilk, it seems. Suspension, the fine, something. So wanted to slip that in as well. Oh, by the way, speaking of New York, I should mention that the official Saratoga calendar, not that it needed to be, it didn't take Magret to, detect what the dates were going to be. All you had to do was work backwards from Labor Day. But officially, July 16th, Thursday, July 16th, through December, and the 4-day week, and after some speculation, Mondays will continue to be the other dark day, Wednesdays through Sundays. The stakes schedule coming out soon as well, and also the winter condition book for Aqueduct is up and available for those that want to check it out. Went up the other day. I was looking around for spots for our horses. Let's take a break. Exactly an hour to spend with you on this Wednesday. I see Gus put together the early pick 4 and early pick 5 at Gulfstream, so I'll put that up at the website right away. All right, if you want to play some Gulfstream first half of the day. Back after this, hour 3 at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I want to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, a couple of minutes into hour three.